You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper, distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus. On edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at Remarkable.com today.
You're about to enter into a new world of knowledge, curiosities, and high strangeness. This is a podcast of Straight Up Strange Productions.
You're listening to Mysteries and Monsters. I'm your host, Paul Bestel. The Beehive State is our destination this week as I welcome back author John Olson to the show. His eighth book, Stranger Utah, hits the shelves this week, and John shares some of the encounters in the book, as well as a couple of chilling experiences that are not included. A big thank you to John for joining me this week. But before all that, don't forget you can support Mysteries and Monsters by signing up at patreon.com/mysteriesandmonsters. $4 a month gets you ad-free episodes, guaranteed early releases, bonus content, and more. You can also click the link in the show notes as usual. Mysteries and Monsters is across all social media networks. Please subscribe to the Mysteries and Monsters channel on YouTube. You can also visit mysteriesandmonsters.com for episodes and updates. Our Mysteries and Monsters merchandise is available exclusively through TeePublic. You can click the link in the show notes. Our intro and outro music are performed by the marvellous Weary Pines. Thank you to Dean Bestel for his wonderful artwork. The show is produced by Brennan Storr of the Ghost Story Guys. And Mysteries and Monsters is delighted to be a part of the Straight Up Strange network. For many, Utah is simply the home of the Skinwalker. But it becomes very clear that Utah is far, far stranger than just that. From Logan down to Cedar City, the Beehive State has strange stories and haunted locations galore, and that's not even mentioning a certain ranch located in its borders. Chronicling another collection of wonderful first-person accounts is John Olson, creator of the Stranger Bridgerland series. John has collected another bumper book full of strange and unusual encounters in another fabulous collection. John, I'm delighted to welcome you back, sir. How are we?
Doing so well. Thank you so much for having me on. It's always so fun to just come on and talk to you about the paranormal and the weirdness of the world. And so with the new book being right here, you know, at home. So it's great to talk to you.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure, John. Like I say, when you made your first appearance on my particular show last year, I was literally within about a week and had about 30 emails from people saying, right, when's he back? So clearly you're a very popular man out there, John.
Well, that's very kind of everybody. I appreciate that. So it's nice to hear that somebody likes to listen to me anyway. I try and talk to my kids and they just kind of roll their eyes. So it's good to talk to people that actually want to talk to me. So.
Well, yes, and I would imagine with your experience of coaching as well, John, often it's like shouting at a brick wall.
It is at times. Yeah. It's, man, I'll tell you. So I'd rather face a ghost sometimes than try and teach a bunch of teenagers. That's so.
Well, there are balanced. I mean, to be fair, you know, strange things do occur around teenagers as well. So sometimes their behavior would suspect that they are actually part of the paranormal on occasions.
I would agree with that. Yes. Very good assessment.
So first things first, before we dive into the book, John, obviously you're part of the cast of an upcoming documentary that's going to be out and about over the summer, all being well, called Haunted: Exploring the Paranormal. So this is a documentary that seems to be focusing primarily on Utah, and as I mentioned in the introduction, some of its more notorious and well-known locations. John, was that something that you were aware of these people before you were asked to be part of it? Or was it this was an invitation that came out of the blue for you?
It kind of came out of the blue. Somebody had mentioned, well, in the documentary had gone on a Facebook page and asked, you know, he was looking for a paranormal expert for Utah. And I mean, it was very kind because a whole bunch of people tagged me in it and they said, oh, you've got to get John would be great. And which was really nice of all of them. And so I got in contact with them and was able to, you know, visit with them and do an interview and talk to them about the places, different places in you, and, you know, kind of be their paranormal expert through this, which was amazing. And we just kind of, you know, went through, it's kind of from a basic point of view. So we start talking about different kind of hauntings and different kind of things that go on like that. And then we get into some of the more haunted places in Utah, which is, it's very fascinating and just an amazingly haunted place, of course. But so it was a lot of fun to do. So
I would imagine as well. It's often, I think, doing this show now, John, I used to, if you'd have asked me several years ago about certain states and their haunted histories or whatever, I would know next to nothing about most of them, I would imagine, as most of us Brits here, we often like to scoff at you Americans and say they don't know anything about the world. But often, yeah, I often say you'd be hard pressed to find anybody in this country who could name every county in England, John, never mind pointing the fingers and laughing at other people. So nowadays, when I see something like that, I just often think, well, it's about time Utah got a bit of a chance in the spotlight, because there's a lot going on in this particular state, is there not?
There is, yeah. And, you know, a lot of times, especially, you know, I'm sure your listeners in England, you know, they think of the United States and it's hard to explain to people how big this is, how big the country is. And so I'm in Utah, which is not the biggest state. Obviously, there's states that are much bigger. But from where I am, I can drive for 8.5 hours at, you know, between 60 and 70 miles an hour in one direction. And I'm still in the same state, you know. After 8 hours, I'm in northern Utah, and if I drive to southern Utah, that's an 8-hour drive, and I'm still in the same state. So, you know, it's a big state, and so there's so much that goes on here. And, you know, the history. I'm often jealous of you guys because you guys have got castles, and some of your history goes back 1500s and further. And ours for the settlers only goes back to like 1800s out west. But there is still a lot that goes on with Native American folklore and everything like that. So the more I learn about the paranormal, I'm partially used because I live here, but I know that, you know, there's paranormal everywhere. And my grandmother is actually from Newcastle up on Tyne.
Yes.
That's where my grandmother's from. And so that's on my bucket list of places to go visit because, you know, I know there's a lot of castles and you're right there near Scotland. And so I definitely want to come visit the spooky side there, but we have our spooky side here as well. So
absolutely. Newcastle's a beautiful place. I've visited it several times. I've worked there for a bit. I've been up there golfing. I've been up there sightseeing. I've been to a wedding up there. It is a lovely part of the United Kingdom. Newcastle's a very vibrant and exciting city, and then you've got places like Gateshead and Durham nearby as well. Durham, there's a brilliant ghost walk run by a friend of mine up there as well, John. So if you get a chance, whenever nice. You get over, you get yourself on that. Tell them Paul sent you.
Yeah, definitely.
But yeah,
definitely will. So
yeah, one of my favourite golf courses in England's up there, and you're literally, you play under the shadow of a castle. It's amazing on the beach. It's just amazing. And I can't remember if it's Dunstan or
that is awesome.
But yeah, there's loads of wonderful history. And like you say, you're not, you're a stone's throw from Scotland. And yes, I was going to say, I should have realised, John, I should have told with your accent that your family came from Newcastle.
There you go. Yeah. It's pretty thick. My accent's pretty thick.
Yeah, you'd be practicing your YI, man.
Yeah. Yeah, I got to do that, so definitely.
Have you ever indulged in any Newcastle brown ale then, John?
I have not. Nope.
Oh, you might be in for a shock. No.
I bet I would be. So,
well, if you ever make it over, John, tell me and I'll come up and watch you drink one, mate.
Okay, that sounds good.
Yeah, the locals call it dog, so make of that what you will.
Oh, okay. I gotcha.
Yeah. So obviously, we're on the cusp of the release of your eighth book. Remarkable, yeah. Really, I suppose, John. I suppose it's one of those things that, being an author, when you released that first book several years ago now, are you still surprised that you are inundated with as many accounts as you are? Or does it feel quite, without, you know, not that I'm suggesting that you're bragging or anything, John, as you referred to earlier, when people were talking about looking for somebody to help out with a documentary about the paranormal in Utah, a lot of people put you forward. Do you think that you've kind of grown into this now, and you feel very comfortable being this sort of resource for these haunted stories that come across your way?
I'm very humbled that people, you know, let me do that and think of me as, you know, somebody that has the knowledge and everything like that. And again, I'm humbled by all of it when people ask me to do something like that, or you know, even when people contact me to be on the show or anything like that, I just feel just really amazed, because, you know, I went through quite a time before I started doing my books where, you know, especially, you know, my wife helped me get that first one out. And, you know, I always wanted to do the book, but when I finally was able to do it, it was just very empowering. And I've been able to do one every year since and gather the stories. And I'm always so grateful when people contact me and I'm able to interview them and get their story, and to feel a little bit like I'm documenting for people, especially those that may not feel comfortable sharing themselves in the spotlight. And so it's just humbling and a lot of fun, you know. It's just a lot of fun to talk about the paranormal. So
I know when we've spoken before, and I've heard you over the years, John, you've always said that when you started out, there were two things you were never really sure that people were still experiencing, or you'd ever come across something like that. And obviously, time slips and the Fae. I mean, along with that, has anything else surprised you through your genesis over the history of your writing now? To go looking back from book eight back to book one and everything in between, have you sort of noticed a certain style or a certain trend of particular encounter that seems to be more prevalent, or that once your reputation has increased with every book, you've got stranger and stranger stories? Or did it just start out weird, John, and it's never stopped?
There's a lot more obvious ghost stories. That's probably the biggest chunk that I get. And then maybe UFOs behind that. And then you get, you know, a little bit less of all of those before. But when I first started, and of course I was locally gathering stories, you know, it was a lot of ghost stuff and some Bigfoot stuff. And then as it's grown, what is amazing to me is that just when I think I've learned everything about the paranormal, I'll start getting stories. And I still don't understand this. I'm going to tell you something that I don't understand, but it has happened so many times. I will get a story, even when I'm collecting for one book. And, for example, doppelgangers. I got a couple doppelgangers, and I was like, man, you know, that's so weird. I haven't gotten very many doppelgangers. And then all of a sudden, it'll be like a floodgate opens, and I get contacted with people with doppelganger stories, and that'll go like in a big chunk, almost like somebody planned it, but nobody, there's no way anybody could have planned that. And the same, some of the Fae stories or glitches in the Matrix, time slips. And so it's really weird to me too, because of course there's some mixed in, but it seems to come in chunks, especially with the really strange ones. The time slips or the Fae stories will just come in a chunk, and I can't explain it, because, you know, this will happen before the book comes out. So it's not like they read it and then contacted me, even though that happens too, where they're like, oh, you know, I thought I was the only one experienced, but it's just so weird. It's so weird. All of the things that go on. So,
yeah. Yeah. Do you put any credit in manifesting, John, that you think, oh, like you were saying there about doppelgangers, I wish I'd got more of these, and then, all, you know, be careful what you wish for, I suggest, John.
Yeah, exactly, right? No, I think that might have something to do with it. Who knows? That you think of it, because it's that same kind of deal where, you know, this is what I always thought, is if you really worry about something happening, it's more likely to happen because you're focused on it. And I really believe that. So, yeah, it could definitely have something to do with that. I mean, I have this kind of belief in manifesting, in the fact that, like you say, you think about something like that long enough, then things start coming in. I wish it worked where I could just think, give me $3 million for couple days, you know, it would show up in the mail. But I think that's a little far-fetched. But I think you're right, though, about, you know, you really think about something, because there's been times, I'm sure that your listeners have had this, where they have a friend that they haven't thought about or talked to for months and months and months, and you're like, you'll get a thought, you're like, oh, I wonder how they're doing, and they'll call like an hour later. And so there's something to that. Did you manifest that, or was that intuition that it was coming? An early egg kind of a deal. So,
yeah. Well, yeah, I think it is. It is interesting, because that's probably one of those things these days that most people just don't think about as much as they used to, when we had sort of hardwired landlines in every home, John. And you would often think of, you know, you would hear anecdotal stories about, oh, I've not spoken to this person for ages, and then ring, ring, the phone goes. I suppose these days it's one of those things that, because we're so easily contactable these days, I think often you can fall into two traps there. Often you rely on, and I know people like this myself, they rely on social media for all their sort of updates and news and everything, but some people don't use it as much as they do, and therefore half the time they don't know. And especially these days with algorithms, you can't really see what anybody's doing unless you specifically find their profile and read what they've done for the last 3 months, often because it's hidden between adverts and strange things these days. Yep. And so when we do get something like that, so I think because we've all got our cell phones and our mobiles so close to constantly glued to our hands often, that these little quirky bits of phenomena that we used to think, wow, that's really strange, I think people don't think of it as odd these days, John. Do you?
Yeah, I think there's something lost to it with all of us. And I'm as guilty as the next person of having face all the time. And I think that sometimes we miss some of those things. If, you know, whether you call it God or the universe or whatever you want to call it, we might miss one of those subtle hints coming to us or something like that, because we are so glued to our phone. We're looking for that next dopamine hit all the time. And so it's really interesting that you mentioned that. So,
I mean, the last book, you kind of cast your net across the globe with Stranger World and had some amazing stories. The Cleaner in the Opera House is still my favorite from your last book, John. That made me chuckle. Yeah. I always like a ghost with standards.
It
always elevates it from a normal kind of haunting, because when we have ghosts that seem to have a bit of personality about them, good or bad, I think it makes it a bit more head scratchy, really. You're kind of thinking, well, why is this one acting in such a way when most people, hauntings are very sort of not easily definable, but I think the vast majority of people, they have an experience with a ghost and they see it and it doesn't talk to them. It certainly doesn't cast aspersions on the quality of their work, John.
Right. Yeah, I love that too, where, you know, and for those your listeners that don't remember this one, I had interviewed a woman and she'd cleaner at this opera house in Brazil. And there were several ghosts, but one in particular had been a manager there, and he would just show up out of nowhere and just kind of shake his head and tisk tisk at the work they were doing and then move on. Like he was still embroiled and just held on to what was going on in that place, to where he was still criticizing people from the beyond about their work ethic or that wasn't cleaned well enough and that's what made that, like you say, very, you know, really interesting too, because, you know, I believe there, when we pass on, we take, you know, the core of who we are with you. And so if he was a cleanliness freak, then he's still a cleanliness freak on the other side and not happy if it's not done right. So,
well, that's one thing for your pupils to pay attention to, John, later in life, perhaps, you know, if they're not pulling their socks up.
Yeah.
Coach Olson will appear. Ooh.
that's right so yep, that's yeah. That'll be a good one, that one and they'll see me fishing. Those are the two places they'll see me, so
yeah, I'll probably be criticizing other people's washing up skills probably, John.
There you go.
so how was the overall reaction to Strange World? Because obviously, like you say, you've kind of based most of your previous works and the stories have been from the States and Canada and therefore. So this was the sort of first real branch out, but obviously I think as your reputation, as we said earlier on, with the books that you've released and the quality of them and the stories that you have and the fact that they're all first person accounts, John, it would seem obvious to somebody that people from abroad would fall in love with your work and want that. So when you decided to think, right, where am I going to follow this up? Was it a conscious decision to bring it back home after your sort of around the world trip in your previous book? Or was this was always going to happen? This was just how it fell for the next book in the series.
You know, it was kind of a combination of both, because like you say, I'm still collecting stories from all over the world and all over the United States and Canada. But I had collected so many from Utah around close that I felt like, you know, Speed, who's also my editor, we were like, you know, where are we going to go next? Because every book got bigger and bigger. And I thought, well, why don't we, you know, I've got enough stories now and a few coming in that were from Utah at the time. And I said, I think, you know, we can squeeze an entire book out of Utah while we're still collecting all over and then go from there. So it was one of those things that was kind of organic and just fit naturally into it. So, you know, that's what I'm thinking. You know, this book will be this one that's coming out, Stranger Utah. Because I'm so close to Idaho, I have a lot of, you know, stories from Idaho, and I think I may do a Stranger Idaho and then go back to the world, because by then I will have collected enough from around the world to do a second around the world one. So, you know, of course, that's three books down the road. Who knows? But it was kind of organic to come back home just because of the number of stories that I had. And even after I started writing this one, again, it was one of those things where once I started writing this and getting the stories together, I had like a big clump that came from Utah, which was awesome. I loved that. So there's just been a couple times where I was like, oh, I'd love to have a story from this area. So I would go to Facebook and get a community in that area and drop a thing and say, hey, I'm writing a book, I'd love to hear. And then I will be able to get a few from, because of my books being out and, you know, and the people who are reading it, I haven't had to go search much. They've all kind of luckily fallen into my lap. So,
yeah, I think it is interesting sometimes that when you're a paranormal author and a researcher, John, and you're a collector of stories, It quickly becomes apparent that there are certain locations that don't seem to shout about their particular paranormal haunts or the locations or the stories that they've got. I know Ruth Roper Wild over here in the UK has a real problem with getting anything out of London. It's a real struggle to find, other than the old famous ones that we all know about, the Tower of London and all the haunted palaces and the underground stations.
Right.
But your general average person experience She's always said, as long as I've spoken with her over the last sort of 4 years now, London is always the hardest place to find anything about. She can find stories from the strangest village in Britain, John. But London, it's a real struggle for her. So when you were pulling everything together in Utah, were there any sort of glaring omissions at first before you had to sort of go out there searching for some?
And so this is what I found that may play into that. It's my theory. You tell me if it sounds right or not. When you live in a big city, you'll get very used to wanting to live in the background. They don't necessarily want to stand out. There's always people that do want to stand out. But when you live in a big city, you kind of want to blend into the background and be like everybody else, except for those few people that want to stand out. Whereas smaller villages or cities, those people are kind of looking to stand out and they're more comfortable sharing their story. Because, you know, I've gotten a few from, like you say, it's kind of tough. That part and with so many people there, there's got to be a lot of stories. It's just getting people to tell the stories. So that might have something to do with it. It's not that there's not paranormal things going on in London. It's that sometimes people don't want to necessarily stand out and tell their story. So, and I know that the stigma around, at least around in the United States, is kind of coming down. People are feeling a little bit more safe to tell their stories. But so it could be something to do with that.
Yeah, that's a good theory as any I've ever heard, John.
Yeah.
I mean, it is strange. I mean, I live in Sheffield is the sixth biggest city in England. And it's one of those places that unless you go looking for it, you don't know. It's not a city that shouts about its paranormal history. Very much. You have to really sort of go out of your way to find it. It's not as bad as it used to be, but it's certainly out of some of them. It's, you know, we've got cities like York and Edinburgh that constantly fight about who's the most haunted. And then you've got places like Sheffield where you've really got to sort of fight to get the information about local ghosts and hauntings. But thankfully, we've got a brilliant ghost tour running now in Sheffield, which is fascinating. I went on it the other week. I actually found out more about strange history in an hour and a half on that than I have in the 30 years I've lived in Sheffield.
Oh, wow. Yeah. And one thing that I found that was interesting when I was getting ready to do my Stranger World book. So I mentioned before, my grandmother is from Newcastle. My mother, so she, during right before World War II, she had married my grandfather who was from Denmark. Mm. They ended up moving to Denmark. My mother's from Denmark. And so I did not have a ghost story from Denmark at the time. Hmm. So I'm like, you know, how could I find one? And so I actually just emailed and called out several castles in Denmark that are now hotels, or they're, you know, they do tours or whatever.
Yeah.
And you have some of them that accept the haunting and kind of steer into it to try and make it, you know, part of their thing. And some that are like, no, we've never had a ghost ever in them ever since it was built, you know, 3,000 years ago, no. And adamant about it. And so I think it's fascinating that some, you know, some owners are okay with it and they actually use it to their advantage if it's haunted, and some that will just die on that hill of hiding it. Because I honestly believe 100% if there's a castle, it's got a ghost at least. That's just my thought. As long as it's been there and is the number of people. And so I just thought it was really fascinating how many letters I like, oh, we don't have any ghosts, but thank you for contacting us. And I was like, oh, okay, sure. But so, yeah, it's interesting. So,
yeah, I've never really considered that, actually, because I can think of probably a handful off the top of my head in Scandinavia.
Mm-hmm.
But having my brother's wife lived in Norway, so they got married in Norway. So I've got a lot of love for Scandinavia. So I've managed to. The only one I've not visited is Finland now. But obviously I've been to Denmark and Sweden and Norway a few times, and I love it out there. And I find it very odd because, especially Norway, you've got trolls everywhere, so they're quite happy to talk about hairy beasts running about. But I've never heard anybody talk about a Norwegian ghost story. John, so it's
right.
And one of the greatest legends of the medieval world is Beowulf.
Yeah.
About a warrior fighting off giants that live in the local swamp. And yet you've really got to, if you're going to talk about places where you would expect the supernatural to be in the modern era, you would expect Scandinavia, but sometimes it seems really hard to pin them down. So that doesn't surprise me in the slightest that you would get lots of castles saying, no ghosts here.
No ghosts here, yeah. Yep. And, you know, and you see that around here as well, with buildings and places. It's from a business standpoint, if you have ghosts, I would say, yeah, I have a degree in business as well, business management. And so in my thought, if you got a ghost, why not use that for your advantage? Use everything you have in your advantage, you know what I mean? Instead of denying it, you know, because, for example, there's a big hotel in Colorado. It was the one that was based, The Shining was based off of, and it slipped my mind the name of it.
The Stanley.
Right now. The Stanley. Yes, thank you. And so, you know, for a long time, they didn't want to talk about it, but they finally been like, oh, yeah, you know, turned into it. And so there's certain rooms there that are supposedly haunted that are booked out for years, you know, because of it. And so rather than being afraid of it, I say turn into it, because people are looking for experiences. So, yeah. And I want to be careful. I'm not saying necessarily exploit it, but if you're turning into the skid, so to speak, why not from a business point of view? So,
I mean, the Stanley's a fascinating place even without the ghosts, because I remember speaking to Kevin Lee Nelson, who is a lover of haunted hotels all over the States. John, he's visited hundreds, I would imagine, and the Stanley's one of his favorites. And the stories, even before you get to the ghost there, about the explosion that nearly killed somebody and they fell two floors and only broke their legs and things like that.
Yeah.
Somebody didn't light the gas lamp properly and blew the whole foyer up, and they survived, is remarkable, really. So you would celebrate that, and it's not just, like you say, lean into it, because it's one of the most famous cinematic hotels in history. Everybody knows that drive up when they come, and you just think, wow. So to be there in real life, you can only imagine that if you're wanting to pull people from around the world in, it's a no-win, isn't it? It's easy peasy, that. It's a no-brainer.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I think so. People don't realize that once you turn as a male, once you turn 40, you have to get into history, whether it's medieval or World War II. It's you get a card in the mail and they're like, okay, this is what you're really interested in now. And you know, I got both cards. I'm just really into all history. So yeah. In fact, my last two books that I read were all about the English monarchy and how they died, which was really, I loved it. And most people would be like, that is really weird. And I'm like, nah, I loved it.
So, yeah. Eye opening in a few of their examples, John.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, it's a lot of people falling off horses in the 14th century and that kind of thing.
Yes. Yep. Yep. Getting shot with a crossbow and, yeah. It's crazy.
Unsavory incidents in jail cells and the like.
All kinds of stuff, and trying to divulge, you know, from what's real history and what's folklore. And yeah, it's fascinating.
Absolutely.
But yeah, like I say, it's the same with the paranormal, because I think if you're really into ghosts, then you've got to be into the history too, because whenever I learn a story about a ghost somewhere and I interview people, I dive into the history or the folk and the folklore, because I want to understand, you know, as much as I can, especially when I'm about to write the story for them, and I can give a little background too. So it's fun.
I've been a big believer of that kind of philosophy for a long time, John, because history on itself is remarkable. And as we know, the paranormal is not on tap. It doesn't turn up when we'd like it to, and can often leave us feeling very disappointed. However, if you're wandering around a wonderful castle that's 700 years old, enjoy the castle instead. And there'll be plenty of stories of a more normal nature. Well, even a few eye-opening ones with our history here and some of the things we've done in the form of entertainment, shall we say, over the years. So if nothing else, you learn a lot that way. And like you say, I think I must have got my card a bit early, because I've always, as an adult, I kind of really fell in love with history a lot more than I did at school.
Yeah.
And so now I'm one of those people that if a really interesting historical documentary or a really good book comes on, yeah, they've got me straight away, John. They don't need to build it up with explosions or anything. I'm in.
No, that's me too. Yeah. And I tie in, I feel, because to me, the paranormal isn't just ghosts or UFOs. It's like all different things that. So one of my favorite things is what's called ooparts, or out of place artifacts. When you find something that shouldn't exist. And, you know, I read a book and watched an article about the Viking sword, and I've lost the name because I'm terrible with names, specific sword that the Vikings fought with. And they were trying to explain how the metallurgy in it is just so far above what they should have had then. And it doesn't hit home until the guy that the archaeologist is talking about it. He's like, imagine finding a World War II fighter bomber, bomber in a tomb from 4000 BC. That's what we're talking about, you know. And to me, that's kind of like the unknown and weird too, that falls into, you know, the paranormal. How would they have gotten that information? How would they have done that? And anyway, I know it's a little further off than necessarily ghosts or anything like that, but I love out of place artifacts as well, and anything that's weird and unusual, I guess. So
yeah, well, we've had a strange thing here recently where they've been doing some excavations on an old Roman settlement here in the UK, and they found these incredible, they're like dodecahedrons, like a multi-sided shape, and nobody knows what they're for. So at the moment, everybody's kind of trying to work out what on earth they were. And they're these beautifully, intricately designed things. They're completely hollow, and they've got all these beautiful designs, and they've got holes on every side and everything. And that we don't know what they're for. I think they've found a couple of fairly large ones. I say fairly large ones. They're probably, I don't know, about the same size as a pint glass, these ones that they found recently. And they found smaller ones. So they don't understand what they are, because they don't seem to suit any purpose. But I think often when we find things, there is this need to create purpose for something, where it could be something as irrelevant. Well, not irrelevant. It could be something as normal as a toy for a child. We don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, and that's the, I think in all of us, that's why we love the paranormal. At least a lot of people do. They love history and they love finding out that stuff, because it's the same reason our ancestors wanted to see what was on the other side of the next hill, or, you know, keep going and keep exploring, is because we want to know and we want to understand. And it's why we're sending things into space. It's the same kind of thing. So we just want to try and learn and understand, and we love the unknown because of it. So,
yeah. Well, I'm always reminded of that quote from George Mallory in the 1920s, when somebody asked him why he was off to climb Everest. And he said, because it's there.
Because it's there.
which is a remarkable, you know, climbing up a mountain in a fur coat with no oxygen. You know, fair play to him, regardless of the, and there's another mystery. Was he the first person to climb Everest? A lot of people suggest he did in the 1920s, but we'll never know until we find that bloody camera.
Yeah. Yep. That camera's missing. So. It's crazy. Yeah. And there's so many different, you know, strange mysteries like that. And when they find, you know, which happens every once in a while, a wooden ship frozen in the north, and when it breaks free on an iceberg or something. And it's just that kind of stuff just keeps me going too. Yeah. I just love stuff like that, you know.
Yeah.
they get me with that all the time when they're like, strange object found in blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, I got to click that. I've got to see what they're talking about. So,
yeah.
It's our love of the unknown. So
absolutely. It spreads. It spreads into all facets of our interests, John.
Yeah, it really does.
So when you're pulling Utah together for the book, John, did you go into it with a predetermined idea of how you were going to function it in regards to chapters? Were you going to do ghosts and strange creatures and other strange objects seen in the sky? And in, or was it a case of you were going to look at it in a kind of localized area and break the state down into the north and south, east and west? Or was it just, well, if I find some great stories, we'll just let it see if it flows. And if it flows, it flows.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Want to keep your personal number private but still stay connected? With Line 2, you can get a second phone line right on your device with a super simple app and no need for another phone. Whether it's for online shopping, dating, or shielding your main number from spam, Line 2 is an easy way to manage it all. Ready for peace of mind without breaking the bank? Call, text, block, and more for only $9.99. Get started with line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in any app store today. Line 2, your second line simplified.
Yeah, worked out really well because I was able to get a balance of, you know, from all the stories that I had and with the help of my wife, look at it because I wanted to have, you know, certain amount of ghost stories and then a certain amount of, you know, cryptids and a certain amount of the glitches in the Matrix and then things that are outside of that. And so it really just kind of worked out really well. One of the stories that's my favorite one in this book that's coming out. I had a gentleman contact me that said, you know, hey, my dad has a great story. Would you like to hear it? And I'm like, well, yeah, that would be great. And come to find out that his dad, when I talked to him and his dad was an archaeologist for a big university here in Utah. And in the 70s, when he was still kind of doing his understudy, but archaeology, he was working with a professor at near the Four Corners in southern Utah. Huh. And they were working on Anasazi ruins. And he got run off that one. When it started getting dark, they had these giant orbs that would show up and kind of chase them off of the site. Huh. And one night, he was there and he was the last one to leave and it was starting to get dark and he could hear something walking around the outskirt of their dig site and he just got really nervous. So he started off down the trail towards his vehicle and then he could hear something running down the trail towards him. So he took off, he got in his car and he drove off. And the next morning he talked to, the head archaeologist that was in charge of it and told him what had happened. So he went with him down there to look. And so they went up, started, and there were huge wolf prints. And there's not really wolves at that time in southern Utah. There's not really wolves now, but there were huge wolf prints that had followed him down from the dig in the dust, followed him down to his vehicle and he left and they followed the tracks. And they went off into the sagebrush, and after about 50 yards or so, these wolf tracks slowly morphed in barefoot tracks and then went off into the desert. And so he's trying to talk to the other, you know, the seasoned professor or archaeologist, and he didn't want to engage. They both saw what the tracks did. And but the seasoned archaeologist after that brought everybody together and said, you know, we are here. You cannot be here until the sun's been up for an hour and we have to 4 o'clock which is an hour before the sun goes down. Nobody's here. Before or after there, you're just not here. We're going to be out of here. But he refused to talk about why. But what I loved about that story is that this gentleman that I interviewed is an archaeologist. This is a scientist that's based in science. And he's telling me, I saw something super paranormal that was strange and I couldn't explain it. And so that just, it got me really excited when I talked to that guy. I just loved the fact that I got that from him. And of course he didn't want to share what university. And I said, that's fine. I just love the fact that, you know, you're willing to share this and go from there. But yeah, it's just such a good story. I'd love that story.
Absolutely. And it shows you the frustration that can often happen for witnesses, which you will probably know very easily, John. The amount of situations like this, where you've got two people who are looking at the same thing. One's clearly thinking, what on earth's going on? Really? I need to talk about this. And they're like, nope, nothing. We're leaving at 4. Okay, that's it. And it must be both frightening and frustrating for a witness in those kind of circumstances. Because I think often, for a lot of people, most people have quite an interesting experience. I wouldn't say that too many are terrified and fearing for their lives. Well, I suppose it depends what kind of experience you have. There's plenty of people who've met Bigfoot who probably don't want to do that again, as I'm sure you're aware. With some of the stories you've had over the years. But that must be one of those things that I think helps cause some, because often we laugh about this, but when we talk about paranormal, some people do suffer from PTSD because of what's happened to them and the fact that they don't have a medium until probably fairly recently, with people like yourself or Jim Harold's campfire is another example of where people can come on with no judgment and share a story without being told, well, did you not have too much cheese? Were you asleep? Are you sure that's what happened to you? Have you been taking your medication? Which is, in normal conversations, they are the normal responses. When somebody's having an unusual and strange experience, people often don't want to be that soundboard for them. So it can't help a person when you have such a genuinely baffling experience, such as wolf prints turning into human. Whereas me and you, John, we've not even said the word, but I think we both know what's gone on there. And I'm sure everybody listening to us talk is going, they're shouting one particular word at us.
Yes. Yes. Skinwalker. Yeah, for sure. So. Yeah.
Well, at least it's the right state, John. This is not a Skinwalker story from New York.
No. And so, but what's interesting is, and when you dive into the history of the Anasazi down there and how they used to fight with the other tribes, and that's exactly where these stories from the Skinwalkers came from, was with the different tribes fighting and everything back there. And so it's again, just how fascinating it is. It's crazy. But that's a good example of one of the ones that's kind of an out of pocket one that, you know, I wouldn't necessarily get a ton of those kind of stories, but it's really amazing to get that story. So,
absolutely. I mean, that's one of those things. It's frustrating that you won't, but I suppose it's also reassuring for everybody out there.
Yeah.
Archaeologists everywhere in Utah doing some digging know that they're not going to be turfed off the land by the local protective spirit.
Right. Yep. Yep. And it's, you know, it's amazing because I speak to people, and the more that you, I guess your profession is in history or archaeology or something of that, the more you probably avoid sharing those kinds of stories just because of the fact that, you know, how quickly you could be shunned in your community, kind of a deal. Hmm. Even with like all of the things that go on with Bigfoot or like, you know, anything like that, if you were a professor to write a paper on that, you'd be laughed at in some cases. That's why I'm actually, you know, for those of you that know Dr. Meldrum, it's amazing, you know, as a professor that he, you know, he's sticking to his guns and going like that. And it's pretty amazing. So
it is, having finally spoke to him a couple of weeks ago for an upcoming show, I can completely agree with you. I've always been a big admirer of his tenacity in the face of overwhelming criticism and pressure that must be coming for somebody that works in the university sector, John.
Yeah. Yep. Exactly. So I have not met him in person, but I've been able to speak to him several times, which has been really great to be able to speak to him. He does, like you say, he does great work in the Bigfoot field. So
yeah. And a very nice chap as well.
Oh, yes. Very nice. He's a really super nice guy. So, and, you know, the University of Idaho where he teaches is not super far from me. It's about 60 miles, which isn't too far. So
that's a day's travel here in the UK. We'd have to check. We'll have to change our horses three times to make that journey, John.
There you go. Yeah, exactly. So, well, because most of us here, we tell distance by time. If you ask me how far away something is, we'll say, oh, it's about an hour away. And that confuses the heck out of people from all over else in the world. So
yeah, yeah.
They're like, I didn't ask you the time. I said, how far?
It's an hour.
Anyway.
Yeah. Makes sense to me now after 5 years of speaking to Americans, John.
Right, right. But it was probably pretty confusing at first. You're like, what?
It's like, what does it mean? It's 60 miles away? What's the average speed? How good is my mind work too much? Yeah, my mind tries to calculate it
right
where it doesn't need to be done, John. I should just accept the answer.
No. Is that an unladen swallow or is it so?
Yeah. Is it as the crow flies? What are we doing?
As the crow flies. I used to. So growing up with old farmers, yeah, I picked up all those as the crow flies and all of that stuff. So yeah.
Get everything in. The cows are lying down. Come on, everything in.
That's right.
The pigs are facing east. Bad news is on the way. Come on. We had a few farms where I was growing up, so I've heard a few strange things as well over the years.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite ghost story in this new book, John? One that's made you either laugh or sent a shiver of fear down your spine? Because you usually have, as we mentioned earlier about the tutting ghost earlier, you always usually have an absolutely belting ghost story in each book you release.
Oh, well, thank you. I appreciate that. I do have some in this. There's a couple that really kind of stand out. There was one of this young girl that her grandparents lived in Salt Lake City, Utah, and they lived in an older home there. And there was several ghosts that this little girl talked about. There was the man. She would always ask her grandma and everybody. Nobody knew what she was talking about, but she would walk in and she would feel really kind of not very welcomed, because she said that she would walk in and there was a man. I think she called it the Monopoly Man, because he was bald and he had a suit, and he would stand at the top of the stairs and scowl at her when she came over, really not happy. And when she asked people, you know, everything, they didn't know what she was talking about. And she talked about one Christmas, her parents' home was being remodeled because they had a pipe burst. And so her grandma and grandpa had invited them to have Christmas there at the old house. And she was really kind of nervous because of the man that always scowled at her and everything. And in the middle of the night, she had to get up to use the facility. She used that as an excuse to sneak past there was a little sitting room where the Christmas tree was, so she could see what was under the tree. And she walked out, and there was a woman sitting in an old style dress with long, you know, kind of gray hair. And she was crying, staring at the Christmas tree and crying. And she kind of stopped, and the old woman saw her, and they both kind of were in shock that they could see each other. And she kind of nodded at the little girl, and she ran back up the stairs and hid in there. And so, you know, she tried to tell everybody in the morning what she had seen. And again, they kind of brushed her off. But she said, you know, at grandma and grandpa's house, she, being the little girl, it was the Monopoly Man that scowled at her, and then the really sad lady that sat in the front room. And as she got older, they vanished and kind of disappeared, and she didn't see them anymore. But that one was really kind of fascinating to me, because did, you know, the clothes that she had remembered was, you know, very much this kind of, you know, old-fashioned clothing. And you kind of wonder how the scowly, grumpy old man and the woman that was crying in the front room kind of connects. There's got to be a connection there somehow. But that one was definitely kind of, you know, sad and scary all at the same time. So
I love a story because you don't get those very often where a ghost seems to have a reaction to seeing a person, John. And I like those kinds of stories. I've heard a few variations of similar, not many, I have to say, which always for me gives those kind of experiences a real jolt of credence, I think, because they're not very common. And they are subtle things like that, like a little girl stumbles across a crying old lady. And then we think, is she crying because she can see the Christmas tree? Is she crying because she's remembering Christmas? Or can she not see anything and she's just sat in a chair crying? And for all we know, she might think the little girl's a ghost.
Yeah, yeah, you just don't know. So, but yeah, I like that too, where she kind of has that interaction with her, because it's that divide between, you know, I believe some ghosts are just static and go through the motion. It's more like, you know, something that's imprinted there and do it regardless if somebody's there or not. And then the more interactive ghosts like that, where it's a little bit of a shock for both of them, like you say.
Absolutely. Do you think that she probably went bang, went, you'll never believe what I've just seen in the front room. There's a little girl wandering around our house.
Right, right. Yeah. You wonder how that works, that veil of, you know, can they always see us, or is it only sometimes they can see us? So it makes you wonder. So
especially with that one as well, because both of the things that the girl sees seem to be having emotional responses. So you could perhaps suggest, John, that the reason she could see them is that they were having emotional responses, which, I don't know, did it make them more visible for her?
Yeah. That's very true, yeah. Because we know, you know, it seems like a lot of times the scarier ghosts seem to have a lot of anger tied in to them, and that might give them that opportunity to be more in our world, I guess. Or like you say, just strong emotions for sure. So, because we know, you know, some of the famous stuff about, you know, it seems like a lot of places have the woman in the white dress that's tied to super sadness, that is, you know, different places all could definitely be tied into emotions.
I mean, Utah's quite a unique state as well, because it's got a bit of everything going on. It's got it's got a very interesting dynamic in the state's makeup, because obviously, as you mentioned earlier, Salt Lake City is renowned as being the center for the Church of the Latter-day Saints, the Mormons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I think some people who perhaps don't know that much about that particular branch of the faith would be surprised to hear that there are ghosts. But I remember many years ago, there used to be a gentleman who was on Art Bell's show who was part of, he was a big EVP investigator, and he was a Mormon. And I think somebody else that he worked with was a Catholic, and then they got a couple of agnostics and another Mormon. And yet they were talking about ghosts very matter of fact. They weren't sort of hanging any kind of baggage on them, John. And in my experience, some of the stories I've seen, I think 20, 30 years ago, I was quite surprised, because I wouldn't expect that kind of belief to be structured in that particular branch of religious faith. And yet, in my experience and what I've seen, they seem very relaxed talking about the supernatural, probably far more than some others.
Yeah. So here's a little bit of trivia for you. I am actually LDS. I'm actually Mormon. So that might shock some of your listeners too, that, you know, I'm part of that faith, and yet I'm very open and okay with speaking about that. And I think it goes to the fact that, you know, a lot of religions deal with an afterlife of some sort or another. And you know, you have your faith and you have your religion, and that's part of what you do, is that hopefully in the next world you get to be with or see your loved ones and be reunited. So I think through a lot of religion you have different ghost stories, and especially when it comes to folklore stories, which are, you know, stories that are passed down and you may not be able to find the real person that happened to, but definitely a lot of ghosts through that as well. So, and it's just fascinating. Like you say, with the Mormon Church having originally settled this area in Utah, there is a lot of history through that as well, and ghost stories that go through that as well. It's really fascinating.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. And so for me, I think it's quite a cultural melting pot, because you've got all these different sort of angles when it comes to strange phenomena, because not only have you got that, you've got other settlers that quite happily made their place in Utah as well. You've got the position of the state being sort of landlocked by some rather notorious states for other strange phenomenal reasons. I'm thinking more towards the south than anywhere else there for you, John.
Right.
As you probably know better than I do, sir. but also you've got a massive tranche of tribal history on top of everything else. You've got all the people that came through on the way to California in the 1840s and the 1850s. So you've got some of those incredible stories of people traveling half a continent just to try and find a few nuggets in the hills during that crazy period. On top of everything else, it's a state that's on the way to other places. And I think for a lot of people, it's kind of seen as kind of a pathway, but it's still a big place with a very healthy population. So it's not just a thoroughfare to get through to California and Nevada and other such places, is it?
No, yeah, exactly. And one thing that a lot of people don't realize about Utah is even way before the Mormons came west or anybody from the United States came west through central, through the center part of Utah, there was a lot, this Spanish mines and the Spanish conquistadors that had mines through Utah, and they were mining gold. And then at some point, and I can't remember the date, but there was at some point they were using the Native Americans as slave labor in the mines and do all this stuff. And there was a revolt, and the Native Americans rose up, kicked the Spanish out. They kind of had to leave. There's a lot of ghost stories and also folklore history around the fact that the Native Americans took all of the gold and sealed up all of the mines so that more people wouldn't come to try and find them. And so, there's a lot of cool stories about mines, Spanish mines and Spanish places and stuff that are haunted not only by the Spaniards, but by Native American spirits to keep people away from that. So, and that goes, and even before you get into the Native American folklore and ghosts through the state. And so there is just such a rich, crazy history in Utah that, again, I've lived here forever and learned, and I'm still learning new things about some of the crazy stuff that goes on in Utah and what has gone in through the Utah history. So it's awesome. And like you say, then you go down through, you've got Nevada and New Mexico, Arizona, and that's all just amazing, rich stories. One of the things that I really try to do is get as many stories from the Native Americans who live on tribal lands and stuff, because they've got some really amazing stories, but they hold on to those just, like gold. You really have to, they really have to trust you to be able to do that. So when I can get some of those stories too, I'm really grateful for those stories. So.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I'm intrigued, because I know one of the gentlemen who was on the Unsolved Mysteries episodes about the strange things going on there with the Navajo Rangers is releasing his first book in September.
Oh,
talking about all the strange phenomena that they've had to deal with on the reservation, which I cannot wait for, because it's one of those things I've developed a real interest in, is Native American and First Nations culture, because we don't get to hear, we were never taught anything about it at all in school, as you may imagine, John, because we were too busy discovering how our kings and queens died. but since starting the show, and obviously my love of cryptids and history and folklore and mythology and legend, I just find it just an incredible well of stories and belief structures, and I just find it fascinating about the spread of the nations and the tribes and where they were and the languages and the fact that they all have very similar mm-hmm. stories, but a lot of these tribes had never met. So how does a tribe in British Columbia have the same story as a tribe in North Carolina? I mean, it just blows my mind. And it once again goes, psychologists will say, oh, well, we've always had this need or this nurture to create similar stories. And I find that a very easy explanation, because I don't believe that people's experience of living in British Columbia would be anything like somebody living in North Carolina. They're very, very, very different parts of land.
Yeah. Yep. And yet they same. And that's the other thing when I get into the fae stories and stuff like that, is just how amazing, even all over the world, you know, our ancestors talked about running into these same creatures. They just had different names for them because this is around the world. But yeah, it's all tied together. And one thing that I've been studying a lot that a lot of people don't realize is that in the 1800s, here in the United States, when people were digging up stuff and finding all this cool, you know, ancient stuff, anything that went against the United States belief at the time that the Native were nothing but backwards people, that we were okay to go take their land and move forward, anything that went against that, they hid that because it flew in the face of this belief that, well, we can take whatever because they're just backwards, you know, people that, you know, they're just living in the dirt. And so there's a lot of history and a lot of stuff out there that's hidden and hidden in the Smithsonian Institute because it flew in the face of anything that they had at the time that was political that said we could take everything that they have and because they're just backwards people. But there is so much history out there that's hidden because of that. And I really hope it comes to light, and it's kind of starting to now. So, but, and that goes right along with the paranormal and the strange and the unknown. And so,
I mean, the other thing that might surprise people about Utah as well, I know we've touched on the danger word for the state, which is Skinwalker, obviously, John. But obviously the state has a real history of strange creatures, werewolves, even not skinwalkers. We've got Bigfoot reports that go back to the turn of the 20th century. Sorry, we've got water monsters galore. I mean, the only thing you guys need probably is some flying dinosaurs, and you've got the full set, I would imagine.
Right. Yes, that's the one thing that could be in southern Utah with the Thunderbirds. Could have some Thunderbird sightings down there, and I'd love to hear about those too.
As soon as I said it, I was regretting saying that, John.
Yeah, we've got everything. Yeah. Yeah. It's crazy. It is. And that's what I love about it, is just how many different strange stories there are, talking to people and especially when you can corroborate, you know, one person's story with another person's story, even though they've never talked to each other, they've had a similar experience, which I think is really cool.
Yeah. I mean, have you, through your collecting of stories, have you found a hotspot for Bigfoot in Utah, John, where you think that people are more likely to have an experience, like, as you say, that you've received reports from people who don't know each other, but it's from the same place?
Yeah, definitely. So there's an area, it's up near, it's called Beaver Mountain up in northern Utah, between Logan and Bear Lake. If you look on the map, and you can find Logan, Utah, and Bear Lake, it's almost right in there. And, you know, I've interviewed so many people who've had experiences there, and they didn't realize other people have had experiences there. And you can almost draw a circle that's about probably a 10-mile diameter, and that one's got a heavy amount of Bigfoot sightings. So that's really a hot spot. And then the Uinta Mountains, which is, of course, just west of Skinwalker Ranch there. In fact, that's where I was this last weekend, was up in there, and that's got a lot of Bigfoot sightings, UFO sightings. I mean, just that's very paranormally active, which is crazy in that area, too. So, yeah, but there's definitely up here in northern Utah, a circle, or I guess you could make a triangle and say that that's a horror Bigfoot sightings.
Maybe they're coming to look at the monster in Bear Lake.
No, yeah, exactly. Maybe they are. So, and up in that area, there's also been other weird things that I've documented from hunters and one that's in my earlier book, and I don't know if I mentioned this one or not, in that very same area where they've had a lot of Bigfoot sightings, I talked to a gentleman was deer hunting in that area, and he was up on the mountain where he could just look with his binoculars and watch this big area. And all of a sudden, this man appeared down in between these trees in an opening, and he's like, he didn't notice him getting there, and he was wearing a suit, and he's just standing there. He's got a suitcase and standing in a weird suit, and he's like, this is really really weird. So he walked down to talk to the guy, and as he approached him, he said, excuse me, you know, and the guy kind of startled, like he didn't know what was going on, and he turned to him and he goes, are you okay? And then he realized that this guy didn't have any hair, not on his head, not his eyebrows, no hair whatsoever, and he's in a 1950s suit. And this is a really strange story. And he goes, I placed myself. He goes, where is the nearest township? And he's like, well, if you walk down this way, you'll get to Bear Lake and Lake Town. And this guy was like, oh, well, thank you so much, and just walked off towards that way. And he watched him go. And he's like, this is so weird. And so he walked around to try and find where this guy had walked into this opening. And his tracks just start right there. And ozone smell, he said. There was just a real weird smell, weird burning ozone smell. And so he watched the guy walked off. He looked to try and find his tracks. Couldn't find where this guy had walked in. And he was really tall and skinny, too. And finally, he just walks up and he walks back towards his vehicle. And he gets there and the whole time from when he saw the guy to where he got back to his vehicle should have been hour tops.
Yeah.
So it should be, from his recollection, 11 o'clock, and it's now 4:30 in the afternoon. So he's missing like 4 hours. And so he was 19 at the time, I think. And so, and this was way back in the 80s. Early 80s. And so he tries to explain to his family what happened. Nobody kind of believed him. And he's like, the whole thing was just so surreal. Showed up, just popped out of nowhere. He spoke weird, saying, I've misplaced myself. Where's the nearest township? And he's like, well, nobody talks like that. And the whole thing was just super weird. Now he has missing time. And so that was, and that's in that same triangle area. And he's like, I've never had an experience before or after that. I know I didn't imagine it. He's like, what could it possibly be? He's trying to talk to me. This is a long time that I interviewed him. And so I went into, and there's a few incidents like that. It's kind of called the Smiling Man is what he's referred to, this person, and back east. And that or Indrid Cole is another one. Yes. Is a specific one where this guy had met near Mount Pleasant or something back east. But yeah, so something like that too, that's a one-off weird thing like that that you can't explain. I just love stories like that. And again, that's where Bigfoot shows up a lot here in northern Utah. So
you just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at ipvanish.com/audio.
How weird. I mean, that just doesn't make any sense on any level, because even if it's a normal person talking to him, why on earth is he wandering around there wearing a suit and carrying a briefcase? I mean, you sometimes see people in situations wearing clothes that are completely unsuitable for where they are, John, because they believe that their belief in their attire will overcome nature and the elements and to hell with it all. But none of it makes sense.
No, absolutely nothing in that story made sense. Like, and he was really, when he was talking to me, because he had shared with that story with a few people, but everybody thought he was kind of, you know, and so he was really hoping to talk to me to find answers. And I gave him the closest that I could, that there's been individuals that have just seemed to step out of nowhere and not be part of this kind of world. And so, you know, I told him he was lucky to have an experience like that. And he just looked at me like, no, that was not lucky. It was weird. And I'm like, yeah, weird is cool. And he's like, no. Because he was a very down-to-earth person that had an extraordinary experience and gestures. And that's why I tried to give him some ideas of what I could have been, but no idea.
Yeah. It's interesting that he bookended it, though, John, for you, by saying, I didn't have anything before and I've never had anything since, which makes it even more unique for him, I would imagine, because he's got nothing he can hang his hat on with that, because it's completely alien to everything else he's ever known in his entire life, it would seem then.
Yeah, just kind of a weird his life, I guess you could say. So, he was just really weirded out by it. And I'm like, he was visiting from somewhere, I guess. Who knows where it came from? But, yeah. So. And it's funny because I'll tell the people, I'm like, oh, you were so lucky to have that. And they look at me like, no, I wasn't. Like, I would have loved to have seen it.
Yeah.
But
definitely.
I would have asked him questions. I'd be like, where did you come from? What's going on? You know? But anyway.
Who's your barber?
Yeah. Who's your barber? That's awesome. You know, where'd you get the suit? It's very nice.
I mean, when you've done this latest book, is there one story in it that you've just thought, why on earth is this happening in Utah, or a phenomenon that you wouldn't associate with the state? Because I know, as we've touched on earlier, things about the Fae and glitches in the Matrix and time slips, these are often things that are prescribed to other areas. I mean, as we say, there are certain tribes over the years that have had encounters with smaller people, and obviously people would often consider the Fae to be more British and Scandinavian and European in regards to that. But then again, as I've discussed previously with other guests, John, with a lot of people coming over from Europe to the Americas in the past, a lot of people would say, oh, well, they brought those beliefs with us. Whereas I like to think that they fetched some other passengers with them that they weren't aware of, rather than beliefs.
Right. Yeah, I agree with that somewhat. And the other thing, too, that's kind of, again, that I go to that is amazing. If you go into a Native American folklore, they have a lot of the same creatures that, say, you find in Irish folklore. They just have a different name for it. Like, for example, water babies, which they talk about both in, you know, Northern Europe folklore, and is prevalent in Native American folklore as well. Yeah. And so there's not a story that I can think of in the new book that would be out of place. Well, you know, everything's out of place for, yeah, for the paranormal, but yeah. but that I hadn't necessarily thought, well, that's weird that that happened. You know, I think a lot of them, again, I do have some, you know, Sasquatch encounters, some UFO encounters, and some, what are called, I have one story in there that falls under what we call the Watchers, which are really large, just black, shadow people. You know about shadow people, but these in the wilderness are extremely tall.
Yeah.
And I have a few of those in here where people have come across, though they just sit and watch you from, that's why they're called the Watchers. They sit near the top of the ridge and they'll watch you until it gets too dark to be able to see them anymore. And I have a few of those stories in the book as well, which, you know, do happen in Utah and in California and the Western United States. And I was shocked to learn there's a mountain in Scotland that has famous, you know, these shadows in the mist that are there. And I wish I could remember the name of the mountain now, but
I know what it's called and I can never pronounce it properly, John.
I'm sure it's something really long. It's not Welsh long, but it's Scottish long.
Yeah, so. it's Gaelic. I'm trying to think what it's called. It's something like Macadon. But it's some of the experiences there are truly strange because it's a place where experienced climbers go. So it's not the kind of place where a normal tourist would find themselves. I mean, you could go, but you've got to have a bit about you. You've got to be a fairly fit to do it. It's not the biggest mountain in Scotland, but it's not easy. I'll say that. And yeah, they've got some very, you know, people being chased down by footprints. They can see strange shadows walking about. It's also a key spot for a Brocken Spectre, which is where you see like a giant in the sky. That's where that comes from. Way. So there's loads of stories. I know there was one particular mountaineer. I mean, this shows you how long ago this was, who was being chased by these sounds, who turned around and fired his revolver at them, which is not something you can do in this country anymore because you can't carry a revolver up a mountain.
You can't carry a revolver anymore. Yeah.
Up a mountain, especially in Scotland. But it just shows you how there are these strange, and it's a very strange place. People have all often heard that they can hear people speaking. It's always just on the edge of where they can see, and they can never quite get to where the sounds come from, John. It's fascinating, yeah.
Yeah, it really is, yeah. And you wonder if it's something with the environment that just seems to sound like that, or if it is something super paranormal, that's awesome. It's really amazing. And so there's some places that in the fact that, you know, we have watchers, which are large, dark figures that will sit and watch you. I just recently, I don't have his story yet, but there was a gentleman that, I was going to get in a hold of, and he was walking his dogs on the trail, and there was a giant, he sees this giant, just shadow person. And it just stepped into the trees, and no matter where he went to try and see it better, it would just move to stay just out of, you know, sight of what he could see. And it was just, he explained it as a jet black, like if he was wearing a giant cloak, but extremely tall individual. And it was very obvious that they both knew they were there, and the dog was extremely upset at it. So it's, again, it weird things that go on. I love it.
Yeah. Especially when animals react to things as well, John. I think that means it validates it for the person, I think, often, because then you know, well, it can't be my eyes because my dog's reacting.
Yep, exactly. When the animals react too, and oftentimes they'll know or see when we can't even, so they get upset. So, but
absolutely. I've often found my dog the other day for no reason at all at 1 o'clock in the morning just started barking at a wall, and because of how we are, we were both like, oh, is there a ghost here? Not what's going on. Oh, he must be talking to the ghost. when your animals act odd, or it's that thing where you see your cat or your dog just staring into space or just staring at something, or it's like they're watching something. that right. just takes an experience to a different level, because you either you can't see what's going on and you're thinking, what on earth are they looking at? Or they start reacting to something you can see, which validates the fact that it's happening. It's right. not in your head.
Yep, exactly. It wasn't too long ago. I think maybe it was last year. I had a family that contacted me, and they had a daughter who was having, there was something outside trying to get in. And I was like, well, you know, they kind of lived in the country. Mm. And I went to go visit them, and her bedroom's on the second floor, but there were like three huge gouges, like scratches in her screen. And she slept with her big husky, and they kind of attributed the husky to helping ward it off, because his hackles would go up and he would start growling at it out the window. Ooh. And oftentimes they would see big, giant red eyes that weren't attached to anything staring at her. And I happened to, they contacted me. I'd been friends with them before. And they contacted me, and we were able to help them through both. I had a group go up there and do an investigation and, you know, get some EVPs and try and figure out what it was. And then, you know, of course, I always talk to, when I'm helping a family, I talk to them about what their religious beliefs are, because you want to go through their their belief system to help. And we were able to do that and get the house blessed and get the daughter blessed and away. Luckily, it left and left her alone after all of that. But it's kind of weird that way. It was trying to get into the house, but her dog was able to at night warn her when it got really intense, and he would, and it was super nice dog, nicest dog in the world. And they said the only time it ever got mad and growled was when this thing was around. So yeah, dogs can be really to that kind of stuff. So,
wow. Well, when you were saying that, that gave me a little chill. Not much gives me the chills these days, John, but red eyes staring through a second floor window, frightening the dog is, And you backing onto the, what was it, like a wood then next to it, or a forest, or?
It went right up into the mountains right there. So into the foothills and then into the mountains. And right behind their property, or went into the mountains, was an old rundown barn. And it seemed, whatever it was an inhuman entity. Whatever it was had decided to take up residence there, because when it wasn't like they had seen it a couple times outside of her window, like I said, and they had also seen it staring out of one of the empty windows in the barn out there that was falling down at times too. So whatever, and I do believe it was an inhuman spirit, not a ghost or anything like that. But like I said, you know, going through their belief system and everything, and talking to them and having a blessing on the house, and it was able to ward it off, and she'd also had some health problems too. And I think that in some of my experiences when I've helped a few people like that, if you're going through health crisis, for some reason, these things to use that as a way in, kind of, you know, you're physically weak, so they're trying to attack that. And that was definitely one of those cases. So I hope to write about that story when they feel comfortable about me sharing it more fully and go through. It's one of those that was really crazy. So I could almost write a whole half a book on that one thing. So, but I'll definitely want to share that story. If I do it was in Idaho. So when I do a Stranger Idaho, I'll get their permission to kind of fully write that up. Cause that was a weird one. So,
fabulous. No, you're not wrong. Goodness.
Yeah. And what was cool is, I say cool, that I was actually able to, you know, see and be a part of, you know, the helping, and I was actually a part of the story. Yes. So, you know, I understood, and interviewing people, seeing the fear that they had and helping them. But, you know.
Yeah, I suspect that wasn't a.
I'd say cool, but they.
I was going to say that's not an experience you probably told them they were lucky to be having, John.
Yeah, no, exactly. You know, I thought it was cool, but it was, that's just because I was on this side of it helping, kind of a thing. So
yeah, you could go home somewhere else.
yeah, exactly. Yeah, I can go home. Yeah.
Before I let you go, then, John, when's the book due out, and what else have you got coming up for the rest of this year, sir?
So it should be out June 12th. Is what we're shooting for now. So, and that will be Stranger Utah. I have on my website, which is strangerbridgeland.com. People can get on there and see. I have some speaking engagements coming up through the year that I will be doing. And so if you're close by, I'm going down to Central Utah this fall. They're having a festival about the paranormal, and they've invited me to come down and speak. I'm really excited about that.
Cool.
And so, yeah, so strangerbridgeland.com is the best place to keep up with me. You can also contact me through there if anybody has a story out there that would love to share it. I'd love to hear it. I'm always collecting from all over. And then my books, all seven with the eighth coming out, is available on and they are all now available on and on audiobooks as well. So if your readers are, there's a lot of people that prefer to listen, which is just fine too, and you can do that now. So they're on Kindle and Audible, and you can get a softback. And then you can also find me on TikTok. I do a little thing where I will do a personalized sign book if you order one through there, and some fun stuff that I send through that as well. There's lots of places you can get a hold of me. So
brilliant. I do enjoy some of your TikTok adverts for your work, usually due to the stars that you have in your videos, John.
Oh yes, my dogs and stuff there. I've got two dogs. Squatch is my big black lab. He's 10 years old and he's just an old man.
Yeah.
And then Sassy, she's a mix. And she is sassy. She's a hoots.
Brilliant. Well, as always, John, I look forward to all your books eagerly. I can't wait for this latest collection. I'm sure many of my listeners will feel the same. I'll put links to everything in the show notes. And I just want to say thank you once again for joining me. It's always a pleasure when somebody wants to come back, especially one who seems to enjoy being here. So thank you, John.
Oh, yeah. You bet. This is always so much fun. I really appreciate you being on your show and listening to me. So anytime you want me back.
No, don't worry. I'll hold you to that, my friend. You take care and have a very good rest of this year, my friend. And we'll speak soon.
Thanks. You too.
Ugh, spam calls. Sound familiar? Introducing Line 2. Get a second phone number right on your existing phone. Imagine discounts, appointments, online forms. Handle it all without giving out your personal number. It's like having a secret weapon against spam. And when those unwanted calls sneak through, boom, blocked. No more interruptions, no more stress. Stay connected, stay protected. Keep your main number safe and out of harm's way. Ready to take back your phone? Visit line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in the App Store today.